Gilchrist moves over behind Kemp. He goes back to pass again. Runs out to the right.
Still on his feet. Now throws. It's good to Lawson. At the 10. At the 5. Touchdown! Touchdown!
The John Murphy Show is on the air.
He is sacked. He is brought down by Kiko Alonso. And there's your ball game.
That's game time right there. That's game time right there.
The John Murphy Show, presented by NOCO.
Good evening, everybody, and welcome to the greatest show in sports.
10-yard line, 5, into the end zone. Touchdown, Leonis, my man!
Hear all the action, all the excitement of Buffalo Bills football, right here on
The John Murphy Show.
The John Murphy Show, presented by NOCO, supplying natural gas and electricity to thousands of homes and businesses across Western New York. Tonight on the show, we continue our discussion of the decade of the 90s in the NFL and for the Buffalo Bills. NFL Network host Scott Hansen joins us to talk about the network's presentation of Decades Week and his discussion of the 90s. We'll talk with one of the Bills stalwarts from the 1990s tonight at 8 o'clock. Safety Mark Kelso, my broadcast partner on the Bills Radio Network, he'll join us at 8 o'clock tonight on the show.
This place is pandemonium! At the 10, at the 5, heads to the end zone, touchdown! C.J. Spiller.
Live from One Bills Drive, this is the John Murphy Show, presented by NOCO on Buffalo Bills Radio.
Good evening. Welcome to the John Murphy Show, presented by NOCO. We are on the air tonight and here until 9 o'clock tonight. So thanks for tuning in. We're going to have a couple of guests for you tonight, do our thing that we do on pretty much a nightly basis here from One Bills Drive. The John Murphy Show, presented by NOCO. Thanks for tuning in. Well, here's where we're at tonight. We are not going to be on the air tomorrow night because we make way for the NHL entry draft. That's tomorrow night on this show. And then the couple of weeks after that, Sal Capaccio will be hosting this show. And then we'll be back after tonight. We'll be back on the air on Monday night, July 14th. Seems like a long way off. It's going to be here sooner than I'm sure I feel right now. But that's when we come back. So here's where we're at as far as the Buffalo Bills are concerned and as far as discussion about the Buffalo Bills. This is the dead time. This is the quiet period. It's been very quiet here at One Bills Drive all this week. But when we come back, July 14th, we will be ramped up and ready to go for training camp. Think about this. We come back on the air Monday, July 14th, and 4 days later, we'll broadcast our first show from Bills training camp on Friday, July 18th. Think about that. So that's coming like a freight train down the tracks. We've got a couple of weeks off to collect our thoughts. You do too. Not weeks off, but at least you can collect your thoughts. Think about where the Buffalo Bills are now, where they've been in recent years. And this is the question we throw out on the table tonight for you. If you want to participate, and you can talk about anything at all, but if you want to participate, give us a call. The phone line's open, 803-0550, or from outside Buffalo, it's a toll-free call at 1-888-550-2550, or you can do it via Twitter. We'd like to hear your voice. So think about this as the Buffalo Bills get set to go back to training camp in a couple of weeks. It'll be just, 3 weeks from from tomorrow. Unbelievable. Are the Bills, as they are presently constituted, are they closer now to playoff contention than they have been for a while? Do you think so? I do. Is that optimism? Is that irrational exuberance? I don't know about that. We know what they've done in the offseason. We know what they've done the last few years in the draft. They have painstakingly tried to rebuild this roster going back 5 years. I mentioned on the show the other night about a conversation I had with former GM Buddy Nix, who was in town for the OTAs, just talking a little bit about where the roster is, what he likes about the roster, what's left to do. He said, you know, I told Mr. Wilson when I took the job, this is Buddy talking 5 years ago, it'd probably be a 5-year process to rebuild the roster. The cupboard was bare. Here we are, 5 years later, and as Buddy's prediction come true, is the roster rebuilt? Certainly looks that way. They have the major pieces in place, you would think. We don't know about the quarterback, obviously, and that is going to be the focal point. But it appears, to my eye, it appears that this team is closer to playoff contention now than they have been in a while. Last year, first-year head coach, rookie quarterback, they probably were not, legit playoff contenders last year. The year before that, 2012, finished 6-10. There were some holes in that roster, but going in, I thought they might win 8 or 9 games. Same, I think, in 2011. The years under Chan Gailey, you could see him getting better. I don't know if they were legitimate, scary playoff contenders. The Dick Geron era, I don't think you could say that during Geron's 4 years, 3-plus years. I don't think you could say that they were legitimate playoff contenders, really, in any of those seasons, a couple of 7-win seasons, but they never seemed to build any momentum after each of those 7-win seasons and never seemed to finish it off. And prior to that, you've got to go back, I think, maybe to 2004, a season that ended a win short of the playoff berth when the Bills were 9-7. Mike Mularkey's first year as head coach lost that heartbreaking game to Pittsburgh that knocked him out of playoff contention. I think that would be the time when you could say the Bills were closest to playoff contention during this 14-year drought. And now I think they're there again. Again, the questions about the quarterback persist. Does E.J. Manuel have what it takes? If you listen to Nathaniel Hackett on our show or paid attention, he says things are going well for E.J. He says the improvement is there, whether we see it tangibly when we watch the OTAs or not. But we don't know. We don't know about E.J. Manuel. And that's the question. Do you believe in your heart of hearts, Bills fan, listening tonight, listener to the John Murphy Show, do you believe the Buffalo Bills are closer to playoff contention than they have been in a while? Maybe going back to 2004. Maybe going back to 2000, the year when this 14-year drought started. I think they are. I think the pieces are in place. The major pieces of last year's pretty good defense are back. A new defensive scheme under Jim Schwartz this year. A new focus on stopping the run with the additions of people like Brandon Spikes and Keith Rivers. Kiko Alonso in his second year. I think defensively the pieces are in place, with the major loss from last year, of course, being Jarris Byrd. I think offensively, we've talked about the quarterback to the point of almost exhaustion, but aside from the quarterback, a good stable of running backs got better this year, this offseason, I believe, with the addition of Bobby Dixon and the trade for Bryce Brown. The receiving core, I think, took a dramatic uptick with the drafting of Sammy Watkins and the second years coming up here for Robert Woods and Marquise Goodwin. The addition of Mike Williams, the receiving core took a uptick. I think the offensive line stands to be better than it was a year ago. Chris Williams going to be plugged in at left guard. They have good young talent there getting ready to play. Chris Hairston may be back healthy and ready to contribute. Not much change on the tight end ranks. But I think overall this team is better equipped to contend for a playoff spot now than they have been in a long, long time. Going back, I would think, to 2004. What do you think? Give us a call. Phone lines are wide open. If you call in, you'll get on the air. 803-0550 or toll-free 1-888-550-2550. We do this topic tonight because after tonight, I won't be back in the seat for a couple of weeks, and by the time I come back, we're going to be 4 days away from training camp. So that's why we do it tonight. 803-0550, the number. Toll-free 1-888-550-2550. Do you think the Bills are closer to playoff contention than they have been in a while? You can define a while however you want. You can follow us on Twitter as well, at John Murphy Show. A couple of responses already from Twitter. Are the Bills closer to the playoffs this year than they have been for a while? Venus to Buffalo says, we are just a quarterback with two good knees away. Yeah, a quarterback can be a big, significant step, obviously. And that's where Zach Quinn goes with his tweet. If EJ can take the next step, there's no reason we shouldn't be at least 9-7. Here's a tweet from a former Buffalo Bill, John Davis, former Bills offensive lineman. In answer to the question, are the Bills closer to the playoffs this year than they have been for a while? John Davis tweets in, yes. Okay. He knows a little bit of something about team building, I would think. Give us a call. Let us know what you think. Are the Bills closer to playoff contention now than they have been in, what, 10 years since 2004, since this whole playoff streak started after the 99 season? Are they closer to playoff contention? Are you optimistic, I guess, is essentially the question being asked here tonight. Are you optimistic about what they've done in the offseason and where they're headed? We're all going to take a break. I'm going to be anyway, and I know it's very quiet here at One Bills Drive. Many pro football fans will probably take a break between now and the start of training camp in a couple of weeks to sort of reassess, to look back at the offseason, to have a look at what's been done to these rosters. I saw for the first time the other day a pro football preview magazine on the magazine store shelves. In fact, I'm going to get one. So I have something to look at over the next few weeks. It's a good way to sort of reassess the offseason moves, reset the rosters, and get a sense for who's playing where this year. And, look at some opinions from other people about how teams have done. But let's do that on the phone tonight on the show. Are the Bills poised for playoff contention? Are they better suited for playoff contention right now than they have been in the last several years. 803-0550 is the number. Toll free 1-888-552-550. If you don't think so, feel free to call in and tell me why. I won't fight with you. I might not even disagree with some of your points because there are some question marks, the quarterback being the number one question mark. And the loss of Jarris Byrd is not insignificant. So if you don't think they're ready for playoff contention, if you don't think they're on the verge of playoff contention or at least better equipped for playoff contention than they have been, call and let us know about that too. 803-0550, the number to call. We'll start things off with Dominic in Depew. Welcome, Dominic. What do you think? Are they better suited for playoff contention now than they have been for a while? Dominic?
We don't need the Buffalo Jills. We got John Murphy cheerleading every night, but that's all right. That's what you're getting paid to do.
I'm not cheerleading. Dominic, if you disagree, tell me why.
You're a good cheerleader. That's all right. That's what you do. I don't have no problem. Well, we need.
You hang on just a second, Dominic. I got a problem with that characterization. I'm not cheerleading. I'm not cheerleading at all. In fact, if you disagree, tell me why. I'm not cheerleading about this. If you don't think they're equipped for playoffs, tell me why. I'm not cheerleading and saying that they are equipped. I think they are, but if you disagree, what are your reasons?
I'm going to tell you why. We need a coach that up-coaches our talent. We haven't had a head coach in I can't think of how many years where we get more than what the talent, like Parcells used to do every year, up-coach. And hope Marone's the guy, because if he is, we're going to win.
Who's coaching now who coaches better than his talent?
Sean Payton.
Really?
Sean Belichick. He's got a great quarterback. He up-coaches. He puts people in position to win. We haven't had a coach that up-coaches in – I can't even think of – no, we get what we – what our talent level is or below. And if Marone's a guy can up-coach these guys, we got the talent to win.
Let me say, Dominic, I've never heard that term up-coach before. And let me say this. You named Sean Payton and Bill Belichick. What do they have in common aside from up-coaching?
A good quarterback.
Yeah, a great quarterback.
I'm giving you an example. I'll tell you an up-coacher. Beilein, your buddy in Michigan. He up-coaches every year. That's why he went from ECC to Canisius to West Virginia to Michigan. He up-coaches. Beilein's an up-coacher. They're few and far between. Let's hope Marone's an up-coacher. Don't think these up-coachers don't exist and make me sound like the coaches like that don't exist. They're out there.
Good coaches like exist.
And
I do know John pretty well. And you know what? John will tell you this. If he were on the show right now, he'd say, I got three players that could be drafted tonight. And he's a good coach. John's a good coach. But he has talent, too.
He won in West Virginia.
Yeah. Yeah.
But you think he had him in West Virginia when he was winning? You think he had him at Canisius? We haven't had a winner at Canisius since he left.
Dominic.
He's got the same talent. He's a great coach.
Well, you're all over the place. You're not going to get
place.
You're all over the place. Yeah, you're all over the place. Because you've switched gears. You've gone from NFL to college basketball. Look.
You don't think Madden and Tampa Bay's an up-coacher for baseball? Are you kidding me?
Don't put words in my mouth, Dominic. I get a kick out of this.
What do you mean?
Let me answer you. Hang on just a second. You're not going to get me to say that coaching doesn't matter. It does. It matters a great deal. It matters tremendously, coaching does. Not just motivationally, maybe less motivationally than in other areas. I think it matters in terms of the assistants that you hire. I think it matters in terms of the programs that you put in place. I think it matters in terms of the culture that's put in place. Is Doug Marone that guy, an up coach, as you say? I don't know. He did it at Syracuse. He's got 1 year here with the Buffalo Bills, and I think that it's too soon to come up with the evidence of whether he's an up coach. I don't really understand what that is, or a good coach. I think he's a good coach. I think we need to see more, but you're not going to get me to tell you that coaching doesn't matter. It certainly does, and it can help, but I'll tell you the truth. I don't know that coaching is are you telling me, Dominic, that coaching is the key to what the Bills could do this year? Oh, he's gone. We were having a good dialogue, I thought. I was just getting warmed up. Dominic, thanks for calling. Call back sometime. I'm not going to say that coaching doesn't matter. Of course it does. It matters a great deal. I don't think that's the preeminent issue for the 2014 Buffalo Bills, however. I really don't. I think it's the quarterback. If you want to disagree, you can do that. I'm not cheerleading. I'm just telling you what I think. If you disagree, call in. 803-0550 is the number. Toll free 1-888-550-2550. Or you can reach out and follow us on Twitter at John Murphy Show. The Bills... more ready for playoff contention now than they have been in a while. Let's go to Pepper in Rochester. Hello, Pepper.
Tonight.
Great.
I certainly think that they are more ready now than they've been in a long time. And it just seems like they set out with a plan, especially in the offseason, and they've made significant upgrades, whether it's their offensive line through the draft or through getting healthy. Their receivers have gotten better, even with the loss of Stevie Johnson. I mean, Bryce Brown, a huge addition, Spiller-like in the backfield. I think that they got something here, and if Schwartz can continue what the defense was working on last year, which was very good things, I think that they have definitely a great chance. They need to learn how to win, but the talent is there. That's going to be their challenge, learning how to win.
What could go wrong, Pepper?
Well, the EJ project could fail. I mean, yep. He's untested, and so you would think that after a year in the system and knowing most of these players that bodes well for them. But he's got a lot of burden on his shoulders here, and if he fails, what are their options then? Because all the other pieces seem like they're in place. I think the most amount of pressure certainly comes at that position.
Yeah, pressure, and they need performance at that position. I think you're dead on with that. They definitely need performance at that position. They're, as much as I like Thad Lewis, I don't think you want to build your franchise around Thad Lewis at this point in his career. And so that's why EJ has to come through. I think we can all accept that. And if he struggles, first of all, he's got to stay healthy. He only got in 10 games last year. If he struggles, there's not a great option. I do think the Bills are thinking to themselves that we need EJ to play well, clearly, but we have a strong running game, maybe that got a little bit stronger this year from last year, and a defense that may have improved from last year. And maybe if he's struggling a little bit, maybe we take the heat off him and just tell him to hand the ball off to one of those good running backs. But I think you make a good point. Mark in Buffalo. Mark, good evening. You're on the show. How are you?
Good, John. How you doing? John, we definitely have a playoff contender on paper. I met one of the new Bills at the airport. The kid is absolutely huge. He's one of our offensive guards. And EJ has to have some accomplishments early. He needs to get confidence early in the season. And he is our quarterback. He is the guy that can take us to the playoffs. But he's got to stop running. I parallel that to RG3. Great quarterback, RG, but stop running the ball. That's when you get hurt. EJ stays healthy. We are definitely a playoff contender. But he has to stay healthy and stay in the pocket, and our line needs to protect him. We're not going to go anywhere if he gets hurt early because he's running the ball.
Mark, I got to disagree. I don't want EJ Manuel to stay in the pocket. I want him to make good decisions about whether or not to run. But with his athleticism, with his ability to run the ball, with the yards that he can pick up by running the football in a timely fashion, I don't want to take that out of the game. And I think all around the league we see evidence that mobile quarterbacks who can run pretty well, I mean, EJ, if you made a list of the most athletic quarterbacks playing in the NHL, he's going to be in the top five of that list, don't you think?
Well, John, but if you name the quarterbacks that we've been naming that are great, they don't run the ball. All right, look at New England. Brady never runs the ball.
No, he doesn't.
He stays behind his line and he throws. Yeah, any great quarterback that we can have, Jim Kelly never ran the ball. Jim Kelly couldn't have got out of the ball.
That's a different game. What do you think about Russell Wilson?
Russell Wilson was a great quarterback. He was a great backup. But I don't like to see a quarterback run the ball in the NFL.
No, Seattle. Russell Wilson, yeah, Seattle. He runs the ball.
I'm a linebacker. I want to tee off on these guys. I want to take their heads off because that's what you're paid to do. So
all
if
right.
You can get a quarterback who's minimally padded, I'd take him out. Take him out. So that's why I say I'm not a fan of a quarterback that runs the ball.
All right. Thanks, Mark. Let's go to Greg in Rochester. Greg, hello. You're on the air.
Hey, John. I just want to say, I don't think you can really say that Doug Marrone's a bad coach. I mean, really, what did he have to work with last year? He's only 1 year in. And I think more importantly, you guys talk about EJ Manuel. EJ Manuel, first of all, he wasn't even that mobile in college. I don't think he wants to run. I think he has a decent arm, but in today's NFL, you're seeing these young rookies, these young quarterbacks more and more. They're ready and they elevate their teams because they come in ready, confident. I just don't think you saw that in EJ Manuel last year.
Who are you thinking of, the young quarterbacks who elevate their teams?
I mean, look at Andrew Luck.
Russell Wilson.
Look at RG3 his first year. Yeah, he took a step back. But Andrew Luck, even a guy like Nick Foles, who got his first shot to play last year, Now, granted, I think there was a lot of Chip Kelly, but, I mean, there's a guy who stepped in. I mean, just think about Roethlisberger when he came in the league.
Yeah.
I mean, that was a
guy. Roethlisberger's 10 years ago.
Daniel could be more like a guy who could scramble out in certain situations, but I'll never see him running, you know, a read option effectively or anything like that.
I think he does. He can run the read option effectively, and I think he will. I think it's part of their offense. I mean, they were doing some of it in the OTAs and minicamp. You know, you rattle off names of quarterbacks, Andrew Luck, and I gave you Russell Wilson. You mentioned RG3. They don't all come out of the box ready to win. Some of them struggle. We don't know. The jury's still out on E.J. Manuel. We don't know if he's that guy. I certainly wouldn't want to take the running dimension of his game out of his game, though. I think that's important for him. Dean, all the way from British Columbia. Dean, do you think the Bills are poised for playoff contention, maybe more so than they have been in recent years?
No. I think it's the same old formula. The fact is I'm not a Marone fan at all, but I'm tired of losing people like Levitra. I'm tired of losing people like Bird. And I'm not a big fan of Stevie Johnson, but he'd be a great number two this year, you know, or a number three. Like, why do we need to lose him? And you know what? Like, I think good coordinators stay with teams that think they can win, even though they may be on the cusp of being a head coach. I think we could have kept Patine. I think that Gailey is a better head coach. And I'm not, you know, I'm one of these Bills fans that every year think we're going to do well, and I know we're not, but I have this, you know, internal hope. But I'm not going to be convinced until we have an off season. I mean, I think our drafts have been good, but I'm not going to be convinced until we keep the people we should be keeping. And that's my point.
Well, okay. You can't keep them all. I think you should acknowledge that. The jury is out on how much they'll miss Jarris Byrd. I won't tell you that losing Jarris Byrd is not going to affect him. It could. They got to replace him. I don't think, to be honest, I don't think Levitre's loss is that significant. I think they'll be okay there this year. I think they were okay there last year at that guard position. And I think the money, I mean, we're talking about pro football here. The money really dictates everything as far as who you keep. They do keep players, by the way. They keep good players. They have, I think, a better receiving option now in Sammy Watkins than they had with Stevie Johnson. I think they're going to be better at that position. Let's go to Chris on a cell phone. Hello, Chris. Welcome. You're on the air.
Hey, John, thanks for taking my call.
Okay.
I think it's basically going to come down to two things this year. It's going to come down to injuries. I can't remember a year in the last 5 to 10 years for the Bills where they've been able to avoid injuries like a lot of other teams have. I don't know if it's bad luck. I don't know if it's in bad conditioning. But it seems like we always get hit with the injury bug at the worst possible time. If we can stay healthy, the team's going to be able to compete. And also, I take a look at the roster. We've got so many first and second year players that are going to have to contribute. If we can get the coaching and they can plan to the potential that our scouting team and our general manager have scouted them for, the sky's the limit for this team. If they can plan to the potential, the team can win 9 or 10 games. If they're not ready yet and they need another year, it's going to be another 6 and 10 year, another 5 and 11 year.
Yeah, okay. No one will be happy with that. Thanks. Let's go to Joe in Williamsville. Joe, what do you think? Are the Bills more ready for playoff contention now than they have been in the last few years?
Hey, John, how you doing? I'm
okay.
A big fan of the show.
Thank you.
I think they're more ready this year, but I'd say that our single biggest concern, well, at least mine in my mind is, besides E.J. Manuel going into this year, I think that Jim Schwartz is going to be the biggest X factor in the way he runs the defense, because we had such a great defense last year, you know, except for the run stopping.
Yeah.
That I think that if, you know, he makes too many changes to our defense, it could be another bad year defensively. And I really think it all comes down to what he does with our defense, because I think our offense is going to be a big step up from the way it was last year.
All right, thanks, Joe. I'm reluctant to call last year's defense great. They were dramatically improved from where they'd been several years before. They were a top 10 defense, which is big. But I'm reluctant to call them the great last year, the 2013 Bills defense. And I'd also say this, with the talent they have on defense, with, what they got, three of the top 100 players on the NFL, NFL Network's top 100 are on the Bills' defensive line, all three of them in the Pro Bowl last year, with Kiko Alonso, almost the NFL Defensive Rookie of the Year last year, with Brandon Spikes and what he might be able to bring to that defense, with an emerging star, a couple of emerging stars in the secondary, and Stephon Gilmore and Aaron Williams. It'd be hard, I think, to screw up that defense. It's going to be different. It's going to be a different look. It's going to be a different philosophy. Coach Schwartz talked about that a lot on this show and last week during the mini camp. It'll be different. They may not disguise blitzes as much as they did under Mike Pettine, but I think they might blitz as much. And I think I don't think for a second that Coach Schwartz doesn't appreciate the value of pressure and what pressure can do. And I think what he's trying to do in playing a more traditional type of 4-3 defense than the 3-4 scheme, you know, and they really, to call them 4-3 and 3-4 oversimplifies it. But I think what he's trying to do is make sure they don't get hurt badly against the run with some pretty big chunks of yardage that went against them in the running game last year. All right, there's a lot to talk about. Obviously, people are thinking a little bit about this topic. The Buffalo Bills, where they stand right now, about 2.5-3 weeks away from the start of training camp. Are they in better position to make the playoffs now than they have been in recent years? We'll get back to this issue in a moment. We'll take more phone calls when we return. We're going to take a break here, and when we return, Scott Hansen, NFL Network anchor. He's the anchor of the NFL Red Zone on Sundays during the season. He's also part of their coverage this week of Decades Week in the decade of the 90s. Scott Hansen will join us when we return. The John Murphy Show presented by NOCO. Tonight, live from One Bills Drive on Buffalo Bills Radio. A sports update from the John Murphy Show. World Cup soccer. The United States reached the knockout stage of consecutive World Cups for just the first time. Germany beat the U.S. 1-0 Thursday on Thomas Mueller's 55th-minute goal to win Group G. But the Americans advanced as runners-up when Portugal beat Ghana. NBA draft coming up tonight from the Barclays Center in Brooklyn, New York. Still waiting for the first pick. The Cleveland Browns have the first selection. And playing in his first tournament since back surgery in late March, Tiger Woods shot a 3-over par 74 today, the first round of the Quicken Loans National at Congressional Country Club. Greg Chalmers finished with 3 straight birdies for a 66. He has an early one-shot lead over Ricky Barnes and Eric Compton.
We're back with more of the John Murphy Show on Buffalo Bills Radio.
Well, if you've been paying attention to our website, buffalobills.com, this week, you'll see that we are celebrating the Bills' decade of the 90s. A lot of good memories there. And if you're paying attention to the NFL Network, you follow the NFL Network, you know that this is Decades Month, and this week is the decade of the 90s on NFL Network. Joining us on the line right now, he is an NFL Network host. He is the host of the Red Zone on NFL every Sunday during the regular season. Scott Hansen joins us live. Scott, thank you very much for being on the show with us tonight. We really appreciate it.
You got it, John. Good to be with you.
Right. I want to talk about the Decades Month and the decade of the 90s, but I told you a minute ago, I am such a fan of what you do on NFL Red Zone. That's some big-time broadcasting there, and you guys do a great job.
Yeah, man. 7 hours every Sunday, no commercials, every touchdown from every game, every key moment from every game. It's a heck of a – it's heavy lifting from the broadcast side of things. But when you hear from fans and from people like yourself, people in the industry that absolutely love it and get their comprehensive look at the NFL every Sunday from it, it makes it worthwhile every week.
Do you feel like a juggler when you're doing that show, Scott? I mean, you have a lot of balls in the air there, buddy.
Yeah, you ever see like the halftime acts at like an NBA game where the guy comes and spins the plates on pencils, and he's got 12 of them going at the same time. Yeah, I feel a little bit like that, maybe a little bit like an air traffic controller when you've got 4 planes coming in from New York and 3 planes taking off to Boston, and you're pushing metal all over the runways. Whatever analogy you look at it. Actually, the one that I like to say is this. We feel like, myself and the staff, feel like we're the guy in the action movie who's running across a bridge that's collapsing behind him. You know, you've seen that Indiana Jones style or whatever. Because if you stop for one moment and look around and think too much, you might as well forget about it for the rest of the day. Because when we're moving, it's just one thing after another, and you got to ride the wave.
It's great stuff. NFL Red Zone. Scott Hansen is the host of that. He's an NFL Network host. You can see him this week on NFL Total Access at 8 p.m. Eastern. This week is 90s week on NFL Network, part of the Decades Month on NFL Network. Scott, what's the concept of Decades Month?
You know, just looking back at the nostalgia from, you know, depending on how old you are, you go back one decade or a couple decades, or if you're a younger football fan, you look back on things that your dad or your granddad told you about. It's, oh, this was the moment, or this was a team, or this was the season, or this was a play that happened. And we obviously have the full vault of NFL films footage that we can show, so we pick a decade and go through it and show you all the best moments. And 90s happens to to be probably why I'm on the air with you right now.
Yeah, because the decade of the 90s was, for the most part, very memorable for the Buffalo Bills. Talk about the, if you can't, Scott, the role that the Bills played in NFL history during the decade of the 90s.
Well, yeah, you can't. You know, it's there are two teams, well, probably three teams that you talk about. You talk about the Niners towards the beginning of the decade. You talk about, obviously, the Cowboys. And you have to talk about the Buffalo Bills. They are, depending on what your perspective is, they are either the tragic figure from, like, a Greek novel or something like that, or they are a team now with a little bit of distance behind it. From then until now, that you can say achieve something that we may never see again, four straight Super Bowls. I mean, you can't. It's almost impossible to get to back-to-back Super Bowls these days, let alone four in a row with the nucleus of that team, with about three or four, maybe even like five different guys on that team that were the best at their position at some point during that four Super Bowl run. Just absolutely remarkable.
Scott, when you think of the election to the Hall of Fame of many of the Buffalo Bills from that roster, history has been kind to the Bills. Don't you agree, even though they'd never won a championship in that era?
Yeah. You know, it's back when it was happening, I actually went to Syracuse University, mm-hmm. and I graduated in 93, so I was in New York State. I mean, obviously, it's a national story, of course, the NFL, but, you know, it felt much more, it felt closer to it being a student right in that area, just what, you know, a couple hours down the road. When it was happening, it felt like it was crushing. It was time and time again pushing the boulder up the mountain, and it would just fall back down on top of you before you could finally reach the crest. Well, with distance behind us now, I do think history has been kind, and people recognize the brilliance of Bruce Smith, the brilliance of Andre Reed, of Jim Kelly, of Thurman Thomas, as guys who unfortunately can't be called Super Bowl champions, but were absolute champions in their own right. And as I mentioned before, the best at their position at some point or another during their careers and during that four Super Bowl run.
You know, when you think about the Bills in that era, in the decade of the 90s also, Scott, they have the distinction of playing in, I think, two of the signature dramatic finishing games in that decade. They almost bookend the decade when you think about the Super Bowl 25, Scott Norwood's miss, and then, of course, the loss at Tennessee, home run throwback.
Yep, absolutely, and you look at those two moments, and you know, I'm sure your audience is even still shaking their heads right now. Sandwiched in between, though, were some of the glorious times and some things that we will never see again, and things that Buffalo fans will celebrate for generations. Namely, one of them that's going to be shown on NFL Network Saturday at 12:30 Eastern, the 92 AFC wildcard game, the comeback against the Oilers, which, you know, funny story, I grew up in Michigan. And so, you know, it's an AFC wildcard game, so people across the country are watching it. My family, particularly my dad, who was the biggest sports fan in the house growing up, stopped watching the game, right? He's just like, you know, we were buckled in. We had, you know, whatever pizzas and whatever wings and stuff like that we were going to be eating during the game. And this game, I can't even watch it anymore when it hit, 35-3 at the start of the second half, or early in the second half. And, you know, I was a younger kid, and I'm like, you know what? I'm just going to kind of peek and, you know, hang around. My dad went out, and he was doing chores outside or something, you know. And I said, Dad, it's 35-10. Okay. Dad, it's 35-17. Dad, it's somewhere in the 20s. He decided to start coming back in and watching it. And by the fourth quarter of that game, everyone in my family had circled around the TV and were just awestruck about what we saw. And for fans that don't have that on DVR or want to get it on DVR, again, NFL Network, Saturday at 12:30 Eastern time, you're going to see the comeback game.
Scott Hansen, our guest, NFL Network host. This week is 90s week on the NFL Network. I came across this stat. Actually, I saw this on the network this week, Scott. A football historian talked about the offensive explosion in that decade in the NFL. I never realized this. After the Giants won Super Bowl 25 in 1990, the next nine Super Bowl champions in that decade finished in the top three in scoring every year. I mean, things really opened up offensively in the league in the 90s, apparently.
You know, that's a great observation, and I actually didn't know that statistic till you said it right there. Look at what teams are trying to do now, and this is permeated through high school football, college football, and certainly now in the pros. They're trying to what? Speed up the game. trying to keep the defense off balance, trying to keep particular defenders off the field. That really originated with the K-gun.
Yeah.
Where the K-gun with the, we used to call it the muddle huddle, I don't know how you guys referred to it, where it was, you know, almost a huddleless offense, where if you tried to run on that short yardage specialist defensive tackle or whatever, they were going to snap the football, you were going to get 12 men on the field. If you tried to run the nickel back on or a dime back on to try and load up against the pass, he was going to snap the football and you were going to get a run down your throat for 8 to 10 yards with Thurman Thomas. That offense and the way that it approached things was part of that change in the NFL, where the Bills were scoring. The Bills were over 30 points a game for a good chunk of that run that they had. And now you look at modern NFL, certainly in college, where they're trying to run a snap every 12 seconds, 15 seconds, but with Chip Kelly now coming to the NFL, trying to speed everything up, a lot of that had its origins back in Buffalo and back with the K-gun offense.
Scott, there were very many good teams in that decade. The Bills, we've talked about, the Packers, the 49ers, but with three Super Bowl champions, were the Cowboys the team of the 90s? And in fact, were they?
Yeah, pretty much have to be considered that, because you had top-shelf Hall of Fame players on that team, on offense and on defense, and you had dominant performances where the NFC seemed to be so top-heavy back then that people would say, oh, the de facto Super Bowl was when the Cowboys would play the 49ers and whoever came out of there was just going to go through the Super Bowl and win. And, of course, the Cowboys, with their dominant wins, particularly well over the Bills in those two, just seemed to be such powerhouse teams, and they were America's team to begin with, and all the extra attention that comes with being the Dallas Cowboys, that they would have to be, in my opinion, named the team of the decade.
So I'm looking at the Pro Football Hall of Fame's list of the team of the decades, the 1990s decades. The quarterbacks, they have two of them, Elway and Brett Favre, and they leave off guys like Kelly and Aikman and others. Do you think? Who's the best quarterback of the 90s, you think?
Yeah, oh, man, that's a tough one.
There's some good ones.
Right? Where do you go? Kelly had all the numbers, right? Favre had the wow moments. Elway had probably the best or biggest arm of all of them. And Aikman came away with the rings at the end of that arm. Mm-hmm. So you could make a case for any single guy there. Man, that's a tough one. I want to lean towards Aikman because of the rings, but then you have to look back and say, no, it was a team performance. He doesn't get there without three perennial Pro Bowlers on that offensive line, and without a Hall of Fame all-time great in the backfield, and without Michael Irvin out wide and Jay Novacek there. How good of a quarterback was Aikman? How much could he be how much would he be looked at as that? Steve Young, I don't think we mentioned his name either.
Yeah.
Played some of his best football through the decade of the 90s as well. So, Favre was really in. I mean, Favre gets looked at now because of the longevity, because he holds so many of the career records, and he did that through the 2000s as well. So, man, it would be so easy to say if Jim Kelly had broken through and had two rings or one ring out of that four Super Bowl run, you could probably look at him and say, you know what, I think Jim Kelly was the best.
Yeah.
And but unfortunately it didn't happen for him, so I would probably lean towards Favre maybe putting up the numbers that he did in the 90s or Aikman with the rings.
We talked about the offensive explosion in the 90s, and the decade was capped off by the greatest show on turf, the St. Louis Rams, whose offense that year was as good as anybody that we've ever seen in the league, really.
Yeah, and of course now, the old-timers lament that, this is not your father's, this is not your grandfather's football that's being played today in the NFL, because guys like Peyton Manning and Tom Brady and Aaron Rodgers and Drew Brees can go out and fillet defenses that have, in some people's mind, been stripped of their teeth, with contact rules being what they are, with pass interference being called the way that it is. But that greatest show on turf team was something that was just untouchable, certainly through that magical run that they had in Kurt Warner's first year in stepping in, where he comes obviously from stocking shelves at a grocery store to being the league MVP and scoring almost, high 30s a game that they were scoring on the way to a championship. It was a heck of a decade, man. I haven't talked about the 90s in a long time, but this is one of the reasons why we do this, and especially in the month of June, where there's not a ton of activity that we could pass along to the fans in terms of player movement or the team development is much more behind closed doors in today's NFL. It's a good time to get nostalgic, and we hope you join us here on NFL Network for that.
We absolutely will. I have one question about the current decade, and actually it's been almost a decade and a half since the Buffalo Bills have been in the playoffs. Do you have any thoughts on the Bills' prospects this year, Scott?
Yeah, you know what? The two teams with the longest drought right now, I believe, are, well, it's the Buffalo Bills and I think the Detroit Lions as well. Well, the Detroit Lions, of course, are one of the original teams that have never even been to a Super Bowl. The Buffalo Bills, you've got to find the most important position on the field. And is E.J. Manuel that guy? I don't know. You guys know that team better than I do. And I'm not sure you guys know. I'm not so sure. I'm not sure the guys coaching the team on the sidelines necessarily know. This will be a huge year for him. He's got to stay healthy, obviously, the whole year. Figure that out. Figure out the most important position on the field. And that defense is going to be able to do some things for you. Kiko Alonso, man, what a fantastic talent he has turned out to be. And you would just think that he only gets better from here. The defensive line, you have three of the better or best defensive linemen in the game. So the defense, I think, will be there. You're still in a really, really tough division, or at least a division where it has a king that everyone, an emperor that everyone's continually trying to knock off in the New England Patriots. But figure out the quarterback position. Throw some deep balls now to your new shiny wide receiver, and we'll see what happens, man. It should be a fun year in Buffalo.
It absolutely should. Scott, I don't know how they can make you work in the month of June when you work so hard during the season on NFL Red Zone. Something's not right there. Really, keep up the great work on NFL Red Zone. We'll look for you tonight on NFL Total Access. Thank you very much for doing this.
John, good talking with you, buddy.
Scott Hansen, NFL Network host. You can see him on NFL Total Access this week, 8 o'clock. It's 90s week on the NFL Network. And as Scott said, this Saturday, 12:30 in the afternoon, NFL Network will re-air the big comeback game, the Bills' 1992 AFC wildcard game, the victory against the Oilers, this Saturday afternoon at 12:30. It is the John Murphy Show presented by NOCO from One Bills Drive on Buffalo Bills Radio.
Is the John Murphy Show on Buffalo Bills Radio.
Really enjoyed talking with Scott Hansen, and I mean it about the NFL Red Zone. If you've never get a chance to watch it during the season, it's an amazing TV show. I get hooked on it. I can come home from like a home game, you know, 6:30, 7 o'clock, maybe 7:30, and you can catch up on virtually every game, and you don't miss a thing. It's unbelievable. NFL Red Zone. Thanks to Scott Hansen for joining us to talk about the decade of the 90s, which they are celebrating on the NFL Network this week. We're going to talk with Mark Kelso about that when we come back. We're going to talk with Mark Kelso about a lot of things. My broadcast partner on the Bills Radio Network will join us after the top of the hour. It is the John Murphy Show presented by NOCO. Tonight, live from One Bills Drive, this is Buffalo Bills Radio.
And this crowd is on its feet, and it is pandemonium. And that's only the half of it.
He's got Goodwin open in the end zone. Touchdown! Touchdown! Flash Goodwin!
I like that kind of party, baby.
Halftime is over. We're back with more of the John Murphy Show, presented by NOCO.
You can't stop C.J. Spiller. You can't stop him. How did he do it? How did he do it?
The John Murphy Show, presented by NOCO, supplying natural gas and electricity to thousands of homes and businesses across Western New York.
Everybody's on their feet in the stands.
This crowd has absolutely whipped into a frenzy.
The John Murphy Show, presented by NOCO on Buffalo Bills Radio.
Hour two of the show, the John Murphy Show, presented by NOCO, coming to you live from One Bills Drive tonight. Tomorrow night, NHL entry draft, so we will not be here tomorrow night. Then Sal Capaccio takes over the reins of the show for a couple of weeks. And when we come back, we'll be in the week of training camp. The season, believe it or not, is coming up, I think, quicker than most of us expect. Not quicker than our next guest expects, and he's going to be ready for sure. He's my broadcast partner on the Buffalo Bills Radio Network. Former Bills safety Mark Kelso joins us live on the line right now. You're ready for the season. Well, you were in here the other day getting ready to make your charts already for preseason, Mark?
Oh, yeah. Well, yeah, I was just printing up some blank charts, but I'll get ready pretty quickly. I mean, there's so much that has happened, really, in the offseason. I think there's a lot of optimism, but I'm not going to start watching the film yet for the first preseason game. Don't worry about that.
All right. I'm not worried about that. Mark Kelso. Mark Kelso's on the line with us. I got a lot of things I want to run by you, Mark, and I'm going to start with this. Your old buddy, Steve Freeman, you played with Steve here with the Bills, right? Defensive back, safety.
Yeah. top shelf. Yeah, Steve, they don't come any better than Steve Freeman and his family, Steve and Bo, and their kids.
Well, that's why I brought this up. Did you know that his son Brad is now an NFL official?
You know what? I did not know that. I did know that he might have the opportunity. I think he worked. I want to say he might have worked in the SEC last year.
Yes, he did. I have the info right in front of me. Brad Freeman, the league just came out with its roster of officials, including, 13 new officials this year, 13 first-year NFL officials. Brad Freeman, field judge, worked in the SEC last year. He played and attended Mississippi State. Steve Freeman's son. Do you think they'll put him on the same crew, Mark?
Yeah. No, I doubt that would happen. But I'm sure he'll be with some veteran guys that they can kind of show him the ropes. He had a tryout. I think he was in a camp. I don't know if he hung on a practice squad for a year, but he was in Indianapolis, I think, coming out of college, and had a pretty good college career. But I know that he was kind of on that track and had worked a lot. I think he had probably worked some high school games and some lower college division games before he was promoted to the SEC, and then I guess, you know, that's kind of a track to get to the NFL. But, obviously they're looking for guys, for young guys and guys that are quality people, and I would think that he's not cut far from the cloth of his father.
You know, what do you think it is about those jobs? This is off topic, I know, but you can talk about a lot of things. So there's two Freemans now, father and son in the league. Sean Hockley is a first-year NFL official. Ed is his father. You know the Bergmans, I believe they're from the Pittsburgh area. They're like a first family of NFL officiating. On the list of future officials, the advanced participants in the league's officiating development program, there's a familiar name, Walt Coleman IV. What do you think it is about those jobs that has several generations from one family who get interested in NFL officiating?
Well, you know, I'm not really sure. I mean, it's obviously with the Freeman family, it's a passion, I think, for the game of football. And Steve didn't initially, I think, intend to do that during his post-playing days. But he was down. He was doing. I know he's a kind of a jack of all trades. He does a lot of construction work and ranches. Does, you know, he, I don't know if he raises cattle, but he certainly. Did a lot of ranching down in Mississippi, and then I think he just decided that, you know, he loved the game, he wanted to be around the game, and I think this was his opportunity to do it. I mean, he worked a lot of games. I remember Steve Freeman working the national championship game when Michael Vick was playing. Where were they playing? They were playing in New Orleans. He was playing for Virginia Tech, I think.
Wow.
Wasn't it Virginia Tech against Alabama? I think it was. He worked the national championship game a couple times, and then got his break in the NFL. But I mean, certainly there's a lot of stress on game day, but those guys are really prepared and generally do an excellent job. I mean, I grew up with the Bergmans. You know, Mr. Bergman, Jerry Sr., was a Pittsburgh guy, and he had a daughter that was a classmate of mine. Where we graduated together from North Hills, just outside of Pittsburgh, and his sons, two of his sons actually are officials. I mean, they might, like you said, they might be the first family of officiating here in the NFL, and I think Jerry, wasn't Jerry... He was the umpire, right, for the famous Jerome Bettis coin flip call, right, in Detroit on Thanksgiving Day.
I think so, yeah. Phil Luckett was the referee who fouled up the coin flip, but I think you're right. You know what strikes me about those families staying in it, Mark, and I'm not going to focus entirely on officiating here, they must be pretty good jobs if the sons see their father doing it. You know what I mean? They must think, hey, I'd like to do that.
Well, you know, I think the pay's pretty good, and obviously there's some travel involved, and you got to be spot on game day, and you got to be. I mean, there are, you know, guys that, and it's like anything. If you do your job well, I mean, it's going to require some work and some hours to put to invest in that, but you're right. I mean, I think it's a pretty healthy reward for the time spent in preparation. So, but it's not an easy track either. I mean, sure that, you know, these guys are evaluated at the collegiate level when they're working those collegiate games, and part of those the evaluation, I think, is going to have a heavy weight in whether or not they're going to get the opportunity. But certainly, I think they get fast tracked along a little bit because dads have done a good job in the league and have a good reputation, and they've kind of lived that life through their father in some capacity.
Mark Kelso, our guest. He is my broadcast partner on the Bills Radio Network. He is a longtime Buffalo Bills safety. If you have comments or questions for Mark, we're going to open up phone lines for the next few minutes here. 803-0550 is the number to call. We're toll-free from outside Buffalo. You can reach us at 1-888-550-2550. Want to run a couple of questions by you, Mark, stuff that came up on the show, including the topic we got into last night. You, of course, played a major role on the Bills Super Bowl teams in the early 1990s. We were wondering who the unsung heroes of the 1990s Bills, where everybody knows, you know, Bruce Smith, Andre Reed, Thurman Thomas, Jim Kelly, etc. Everybody knows Daryl Talley and the rest of them, but who were the guys who maybe were under the radar, didn't get a whole lot of credit, in your mind, to help those Super Bowl teams be so successful?
Well, I mean, we had, I mean, how many guys did we have? I mean, we had, I think, 22 guys is the number that sticks in my head, is guys that played on all four of those teams. But, I mean, that's kind of the beauty of the whole collection of players that we had in the whole organization at that time, is that we had a group of guys who enjoyed playing together. We had a group of guys who played specific roles, and guys that were really good at the things that they were asked to do. There were a lot of guys. I don't even remember all the guys that were here for 4 years. I guess if I start rattling off names, I could remember most of them. But the one thing that I think it's a good topic. You know, my unsung hero, the number one guy, would probably be Daryl Talley, because he was a three-down linebacker and he only went to the Pro Bowl one time, which is kind of unfathomable to me, because he was such an important part of our defense through those critical years. But we had a lot of role players, and I think one of those offensive linemen, we had the best offensive line in football for probably 5 years, I would say, and one of those guys has got to, I think, have consideration for the Hall of Fame at some point, whether it's Kent or Jimmy Richter or Will Wolford or, you know, one of those guys. There was a collection of guys, John Davison, you know, you start naming guys, you forget Howard Ballard. But you know, John Cena, I know you had on the show too. Yeah. So you had a group of guys that really meshed together and played so well together as a unit. And then, you forget about guys like Kirby Jackson and guys that were integral to a defensive backfield that played really well. And Nate Odoms was in that group for a bunch of years. Henry Jones was there for a couple of those Super Bowls as a high round draft pick. JD. I mean, there's so many guys, and I think that was the key to the success of the team, is that we had. You know, we had some key guys who were Hall of Fame guys, and then we had a collection of guys around them that were really good players. Some, I think, Hall of Fame caliber that may not have gotten that nod or may never get it, but certainly high caliber guys. And then other guys who, you know, like myself too, that were really good players, nowhere near Hall of Fame player, but you're good players, you're good role players, you do exactly what you need to do to put together a good club. And everybody knew their role, and I think that's one of the reasons we had the success that we did.
You don't want to name one.
Well, not just one, no, because there's too many guys.
All right, how about two? Your teammate Jim Kelly tweeted in last night that he thought Ken Hull and Daryl Talley were the unsung heroes. Can you get it down to two?
Well, can I get it down to two? I mean, I got to say, again, I'd probably have to go with an offensive lineman. I would say a guy like Jimmy Richter. I mean, we played more, and you can ask Jim this, and you know, so he can correct me if I'm wrong, but we played a lot of man-blocking schemes from an offensive line perspective. And when Jim was uncovered as the offensive guard, I mean, he would come from his offensive guard position, and he would pick up the nickel blitzing linebacker or the nickel back when he blitzed off the edge. I mean, that's almost unheard of today. I mean, a guy to be able to even, first of all, recognize that, and then to be able to get out and be in position to protect that side of the quarterback when that guy's coming off the edge. And he was outstanding at that. I mean, I'd have to give a guy like Jim Richter, you know, a serious nod, certainly. From a defensive perspective, you know, I think Shane Conlon was integral. I mean, how many years was Shane here for the Super Bowls? Two or three?
At least two, right? I think three, maybe.
At least two, but he played 9 years in the league. He was six here in Buffalo. So I think he might have only been here for the first two.
He left here. Yeah, you're right. No, 90, 91, and 92, 3 years.
Okay, so all three. So he's a guy. He's a guy that should obviously get a lot of accolades as well for the quality of play we have with that front seven, you know, and made my job pretty easy.
Mark Kelso, our guest, he played 8 years with the Buffalo Bills in the secondary. He's been on our broadcast, I think, longer than that now, right, Mark? Are you going into your 10th year with us?
Ninth or tenth, I think. Yeah. Well, you guys make my job easy. Boy, I got the easiest job in football, don't I?
Well, you work it pretty hard. You make it look difficult sometimes. Well, we
work hard. You know, like I said, if you want it to be good, you got to work hard. But, I work with the best guys in the business, and so it makes my job pretty easy. So, you know, so all I got to do is talk about it and explain it a little bit.
Hey, speaking of that, last time we had you on the show, it was around the time of the OTAs. We talked about OTAs a lot, but you also, at that time, had launched your book, Play the Down, a football film study guide. talk about that with us again and how you've gone around trying to market this book and, you know, what kind of interest is out there for your book, Play the Down.
Well, I've been around to a lot of programs, collegiate programs and high school programs as well. I mean, it's kind of written at a collegiate level, but it's a little heavy for high school, but really good for them because you talk to people. We discussed this last time when I was on about how the guys, you look at film, but if you don't really have a plan for what you're looking to get out of your film study, you know, you kind of get done with your film study and you recognize a few athletic guys or you might see a skill set of one particular guy, but you really don't get what you need to prepare for game day. So, you know, the book, it's a workbook. I've been with a lot of coaches around Western New York, two high school coaches that said, yeah, they're ordering books for their team this year or, you know, a bunch of their key guys who can get together and study film with some of their teammates in position groups. You know, at the collegiate level, there's a number of colleges that have said that, yeah, they would like to have those. And so there's been some really good interest. And my fear is that, all the interest is going to come by June 12th or July 12th. I mean, when things kind of start ramping up, college coaches right now are running camps or traveling and working camps, and then they'll have a couple weeks off over the 4th, and then they'll kind of get geared up again. But it is a quality piece. I mean, I'm not, I'm kind of a modest guy, but it is a quality piece. It's easy for a player to utilize, particularly with all the stuff that they do online with Huddle and the iPad and the way that they can watch film at home by just logging into their account. It gives them an opportunity to have a template for what they need to get out of the film study, and it will help them prepare and be best prepared on game day. It's not to coach them, but it'll help them understand why the coaches are trying to initiate certain things, offensive or defensively, different strategies, because they'll recognize the things that the coaching staff has recognized and why they want to put them in these certain situations. So there's been a lot of interest and some interest. Actually, what I didn't think, John, is that, you know, a couple people have called me that get this, the All 22.
Yeah.
The NFL, and he said, you know, I just want to buy one, you know, NFL season, an offensive and defensive book. So when I break down the Bills and I look at their upcoming opponent, I can utilize the workbook. And that was a person who's a lawyer who was in the law profession in Hamburg for many, many years. I think retired now, maybe practice a little bit, but it'll be really interesting to see, you know, the use that he gets out of them. But that's another market that I hadn't even thought of. You know, fantasy football or people that are into that film study of the NFL, and it would make their film study much more effective and hopefully help teach them some of the finer points of the game and skill sets of particular players.
So anyone listening tonight, whether they're coaches or players or even fans, there's a website, right, where people can get info on your book?
Yeah, and the website is playthedown.com. Now you're going to have to type in like Square first because that's the secured server that we're using. You know, if people purchase the books online to offer their credit card information or debit card, and so you type in Square playthedown.com and then it'll come up. And the information is there. My phone number is there. If anybody wants to talk to me about it, more than happy to answer those questions. Then if you have an inquiry or place an order, it just gets forwarded to my email right through Play the Down. So feel free to do that. Like I said, if you like football, if you enjoy studying the game of football, and if you'd like to know the finer points the result of what the strategy might be and how teams really look at the little nuances to determine how they might have success on game day, then it's something that you'd be really interested in.
Mark Kelso is our guest, my partner on the Buffalo Bills broadcast team, and the phone lines are open if you have a comment or a question. 803-0550, the number, or from outside Buffalo, it's toll-free call at 1-888-550-2550. Here's a call from John in Rochester. What's on your mind tonight, John?
Hey, John. Hey, Mark. Man, I'll tell you, one of the most memorable moments I've ever had as a Bills fan was, I think, 1989 in Houston, when you took an interception right before half to the house. And I'll never forget, Bob Trumpley was the color guy, and I think Kirky was the TV guy. And as you were going in for getting close to scoring, Leonard Smith came out of nowhere, and Trumpley, it looked like he was going to clip a guy, and Trumpley goes, "No!" And the rest is history. They never called the clip, and you got your touchdown. That was phenomenal.
Well, he didn't clip him. That was actually, I think that was a blocked field goal. that somebody had blocked and I had picked that. I think that's what it was when I returned for a touchdown. But Leonard would never do that to me, would he?
But it was classic, man. And Trumpy, you could tell he was pulling for the Bills because he didn't want to see Leonard screw things up. But Leonard was a great player, and you were a great player, and that was an exciting game. And then Andre Reed scored the winning touchdown in overtime, I believe.
Yeah, it was. I'm looking at it here, a 47-41 final. Reed scored a 28-yard touchdown from Jim Kelly to win it. But, Mark, in the second quarter, a 76-yard return of a blocked field goal. 76 yards, Mark.
I was tired, buddy. Let me tell you something. And I can still remember that game. Leonard Smith's another one of those unsung heroes. I mean, and guy that played just tremendous player for us and a great teammate. But I can remember sitting, what was that, 89. So Scott Radisek, who's the architect for Populous, who's responsible for the stadium design and everything. So he was on the team then because he was put on waivers and claimed by Indianapolis before that 90 season. So I can remember sitting with him after that game. And what was the final score?
47-41.
He said, "Have you ever in your life given up 41 points in a game and still won?" And I said, "I don't think so." So we weren't too happy with our defensive effort, but that was kind of when things began to click and everybody started to come together. And I think that the one piece that was missing probably in 87 was the running back and then with Thurman and Kenny Davis, and they solidified that position, and everything kind of went the right way in 88. And then in 89 we had a couple of blips, and I think we thought we were a little better than we were, and once we really figured out what we needed to do to prepare day in and day out and how that would affect our performance on Sunday, and when we figured those things out, then things really began to roll in those 4 years.
Hey, Mark Kelso is on the line with us. Mark, I asked this question on the air earlier, and I want to get your thoughts on this. And we've got to get a couple of things in here in the next few minutes, so I guess I'm asking you to be brief. But
keep it brief. I got it.
Are the Bills better equipped for playoff contention this year than they have been in a long time? What's your opinion?
Yes, I do believe they are. But let's not talk about playoffs. Let's talk about number of victories. And I'm not sure this is a number I really want to pick yet. But I don't think 10's out of the question here. And if they win 10 games and they don't make the playoffs, I'd be surprised. But they've improved in a lot of areas. I mean, I thought this year's draft was equally as strong as last year's, although only time will tell to see how the performances of these young guys bear out. But if the second-year guys that were so successful as rookies last year, and EJ, being a little bit of a fire because he had a lot of great success but then had a bunch of injuries and had some games, I think, that he'd like to have back as well. But if he matures to the level that I think that he would like to and the coaching staff would like him to, and the young guys that they drafted this year play a key role. They get some dynamic play out of the receiver position with Sammy and those young guys, the maturity with Robert Woods and Marquise and TJ and those guys. And I really think that's not out of reach, a 10-win season. Last year, they beat one of the top teams in the NFL in the Carolina Panthers when they came in here to Ralph Wilson Stadium. And that's the quality. They just have to maintain that quality week in and week out. And if they get good quarterback play and the running game is solid, I think they have an opportunity to win 10 games, and that should put them in the playoffs.
Hey, Mark, I want to ask you about something you're involved with the folks at Excelsior Orthopedics. It's an effort to kind of bring NFL-style training methods, in particular hydration methods, to high school and youth teams all over Western New York. Tell us about that.
Yeah, great group of physicians up there. I mean, we have what a great medical community we have in Western New York with UB Orthopedics and Excelsior Orthopedics. And I have guys at Excelsior that have treated my own kids, and there's guys up there that can pretty much do anything to put players back together. But I think one of the things that they want to do, I sit on a foundation board with Excelsior Orthopedics, and the one initiative that they'd like to tackle this year is the hydration initiative. And so what they've done is they've put together a race, and the race is going to be on August 7th down at the NFTA Boat Harbor at 7 o'clock. Now, it's a 7.7K. So the 7.7, you'll recall, do you know what that number is for?
No.
This is the whole initiative was kind of came to light with the Corey Stringer, unfortunate passing of Corey Stringer when he was with the Minnesota Vikings. So 7.7K, his number. I mean, he has the Corey Stringer Foundation, which utilizes, you know, his number when he played for the Vikings, 77. I do think there's going to be some people from the Corey Stringer Foundation involved in the evening there on August 7th. So they put together this 7.7K soaker run, they call it. So I think the Buffalo Fire Department is going to be a part of it. And it is a sanctioned run for those serious runners here in Western New York. The Buffalo Running Club has sanctioned it, and the times will be official. I know there's a lot of runners in Western New York to participate in a number of events throughout the summer and collect all their times. But it looks like it's shaping up to be a really good event. They have enlisted over 43 schools, high schools around Western New York, Murph, to participate in the event as well and to help gain support for it. And then what's going to happen for the money raised with the entrance fee and some donations online, I'll give you a place where you can go online if people are interested in that. But then what's going to happen is that money is going to go right back to those 43 schools that have enlisted their services to help with the evening on August 7th and some of the preparation. It's going to go right back to them to purchase adequate hydration. I think what they're looking to purchase is those hydration stations with the 20-gallon tank, and so the athletes will be adequately hydrated here for their upcoming fall sports season.
Good initiative. August 7th is the race, and Excelsior Orthopedics will have more information on that. Mark, as always, it's a pleasure to talk with you. We are just a couple of weeks away from training camp, and you know what that means. A couple of weeks after that from preseason, it'll be here before you know it, buddy.
Well, I'll tell you what, we're ready. Do we need to make the board bigger? There are so many guys in the preseason. Yeah. But I tell you, it's going to be exciting. It really is going to be exciting, and it's going to be fun to see Andre inducted into the Hall of Fame. And the addition of that extra game, I think, is going to be a good thing for these young guys. So there's a lot of optimism, certainly, and hope springs eternal here this time of year. Guys will get some rest, and then they'll kind of gear it back up here as July rolls around and be ready for training camp. So it's going to be an exciting time, and hopefully there'll be a lot of people at St. John Fisher, and I'm looking forward to it every minute of it, no question, Mark.
Me too. Mark, good talking to you. We'll talk again.
Wait, give me one more. So if people were looking for this Soaker Run, just tell them to Google Soaker Run Buffalo, and it'll come up. It'll be the first one that comes up. They can get more information online.
Soaker Run Buffalo. Okay, we'll repeat that too. Thanks, Mark.
Beautiful. Thanks, Jeff. Have a good day, buddy.
Mark Kelso, the color man on the Bills Radio Network, 8-year player for the Bills at the safety spot. Soaker Run Buffalo for more information on that run coming up August 7th. We're back in a moment. The John Murphy Show presented by NOCO. We're live tonight from One Bills Drive. This is Buffalo Bills Radio. A Buffalo Bills Radio Network sports update. The NBA draft tonight, and the Cleveland Cavaliers have selected Kansas guard Andrew Wiggins with the first overall pick. He's just 19 years old. He averaged 17 points and 6 rebounds in his one season with the Jayhawks. World Cup soccer. The United States has advanced to the knockout stage of consecutive World Cups for just the first time, but Germany beat the U.S. 1-0 Thursday in soggy conditions. The Germans went on to win Group G, but the Americans advanced as runners-up when Portugal defeated Ghana. Tiger Woods back on the course today, playing his first tournament since back surgery in late March. Tiger shot a 3-over par 74 in the first round of the Quicken Loans National at Congressional Country Club. Greg Chalmers finished with 3 straight birdies for a 66 and the early first-round lead.
We're back with more of the John Murphy Show on Buffalo Bills Radio.
Thanks again to Mark Kelso for joining us. That race he was talking about, the Soaker 7.7K. It is August 7th, 7 p.m. at the NFTA Boat Harbor, Furman Boulevard in Buffalo. You can register online, as Mark said. If you just Google up Soaker Run Buffalo, you'll find all the information. You can go to www.scorethis.com. The Soaker 7.7, run by Excelsior Orthopedics. They're helping to sponsor it. It's an event to raise money to promote the prevention of heat-related illnesses in sport and support health and safety for all athletes. Proceeds go to benefit local high schools with equipment to combat heat-related illness and injury. The Soaker 77K, August 7th, 7 p.m. at the NFTA Small Boat Harbor. It is the John Murphy Show presented by NOCO here until 9 o'clock tonight. A couple of months ago, we got a chance to talk to one of the great names in Hollywood film directing, Ivan Reitman. 10 weeks ago, he put out the film Draft Day a sports drama. Ivan Reitman, the director, Kevin Costner, the star. It came out just about a month or so before the NFL draft. As you may know, there was discussion back in 2013 of the Buffalo Bills being the focus of the movie Draft Day. That did not take place. They instead settled on Cleveland. But we had a chance to talk with director Ivan Reitman about his movie Draft Day and the decision to set to shoot the movie in Cleveland as opposed to Buffalo.
It's a real pleasure to speak to the people of Buffalo. And first of all, apologize that we didn't get a chance to shoot it in your beautiful city. But we try to show it in the best light, I hope you agree.
Yeah, you came close to shooting it here. Tell us that story, Ivan, about almost shooting the movie here in Buffalo at One Bills Drive.
Yeah, well, you know, I came out, I scouted it, I liked it a lot. I think the history of Buffalo was really appropriate to the story. In fact, the writer Scott Rothman and Rajiv Joseph wrote it, setting it in Buffalo for the Kevin Costner character. But we were really fighting a very tight budget, and the story also worked with the Cleveland Browns, who also, you know, have even a more sorry history, unfortunately, than the Bills. And because of the movie giveback that's now available in Ohio, there was like a $3 million differential, which was a substantial amount for our budget, and there was no way for us to stay in Buffalo, unfortunately.
Ivan, what was it about the Bills franchise or eventually the Browns franchise that made it necessary to have that sort of history, that sort of franchise involved in the movie Draft Day?
Well, both cities have wonderful fan bases who have sort of stuck with their teams through thick and thin, mostly thin, unfortunately. I know the Bills had a few years there where they got into the Super Bowl and unfortunately lost. In a heartbreaking fashion. So in that way, it worked very well for us. And, you know, with the Browns, with the team moving out of the city, losing it for 9 years, having had no success, that made the sort of storyline work very well for either of the cities. Plus, they're kind of Rust Belt East Coast towns with a big industrial side to them that have seen somewhat better days, that are trying to make a comeback right now. So I think all these, and they're cities, but not too big. So all those things I thought were appropriate for the story.
Yeah, I've seen interviews that you've done and that Kevin Costner have done about the movie Draft Day, in which you've said it was crucial to have real NFL teams, real NFL logos, real NFL involvement in this film. Why was that so essential, Ivan?
Well, I can't see doing a movie called Draft Day about the draft without actually using the NFL. I wanted to be able to shoot in the city when the draft is going on. I wanted to use real personalities and, most importantly, real teams, you know, with real uniforms. Because, you know, look, we try to get this movie right. We try to get all the details. At its heart, it's this great sports drama with comedy that gets you very emotionally twisted by the end of it. And it's like going to some kind of championship game where you're not quite sure what the outcome is, but it all happens off the field. And I thought it was very important that all the touchstones that fans have come to expect from football and from all the great sports teams were shown here.
We're with Ivan Reitman, the director of the new movie Draft Day, that's in theaters this Friday. Ivan, I know you spent a large portion of your young years in Toronto. You went to school right down the road in Hamilton at McMaster. Where, are you familiar with Buffalo or the Buffalo Bills from that exposure?
Yes, and of course I've seen where the Bills have come in to do kind of some of their local games right in the city. Yep. I'm not so sure that's such a good thing for Buffalo, but it's but it is building, I guess, a Canadian awareness of the great game.
Ivan, the movie stars Kevin Costner. How has he become the go-to guy for American sports movies?
Well, he's this, like, wonderfully all-American guy. He reminds me of those great film stars of the past, like Gary Cooper, who you knew you could trust. The sound of his voice is very comforting. He's the kind of guy who can lead you into battle. There's a dignity about him, and there's just sort of a know-how, which happens to be real, about various sports, particularly baseball and football, for Kevin. And So it just was really appropriate. And he's really smart about it.
You know, there's obviously there's some great stars in the movie, Jennifer Garner and Dennis Leary. A couple of character actors who caught my eye, guys who I really love their work. And I just wonder if you can talk about Kevin Dunn, who you've worked with before, and Timothy Simons, who I guess has a small role in the film as well.
Yeah. Well, it's he's on screen a lot. Tim Simons, though, again, I try to find people who sound like they belong in the war room, in the football war room. I didn't want guys who sounded like actors from L.A., no matter where they may have come from. So I was just looking for a kind of a reality, and Tim Simons has that, as does Kevin Dunn. It's the reason when I did the movie Dave, I used him. I've used him about three times now. I love him as an actor. And I just, sound, voices are very important, and the way that people look, that they don't look, that they look like they come from a real place in America, not from Hollywood.
Yeah, I'm a big fan of both those guys. You also had a couple of our very own Bill staffers, I guess. I see them on the credits, Russ Brandon and Mark Conan, a couple of big executives here for the Bills. They have speaking roles. What kind of roles do they have, Ivan?
Well, Russ definitely has a speaking role. And he, you know, I got to meet him when we were researching the film and when we were checking out Buffalo and the facilities in Buffalo. And he was extraordinarily helpful and very helpful with the script as well in terms of pointing out if there was anything inaccurate or what was possible. You know, we try to do that with everything, not only with the NFL, with coaches, with rookies who've gone through that experience. You know, and Brandon was just really, really helpful. And he said, you know, I'm a huge fan of your old movies like Stripes, and I hope you would consider me for one of the roles. I said, Russ, you got it. You're in the picture whether we go with Buffalo or not. And he actually represents, he looks like the CEO. He plays the CEO of the Buffalo Bills in a very nice negotiation scene. That I know we've shown it to the Bills already, and they seem very happy.
That sounds like fun. Nate, obviously, you mentioned some of your previous work, Stripes, Meatballs. You were a producer in 1978 of National Lampoon's Animal House. Ivan, I had a conversation with my 22-year-old son the other day who was extolling the virtues of Judd Apatow, who obviously is very talented. But I tried to tell him, without Animal House, there is no Judd Apatow and several other movies. Do you agree? I mean, and it's kind of silly to say it, but Animal House was an important picture in where Hollywood went the last 30, 35 years.
Yeah, I think Animal House was this kind of Teutonic shift where we went from kind of the comedy voices of the war generation to the post-war generation, the baby boom generation. And it just created a new way of doing comedy in films and a new kind of language. And I think it continued from there. I mean, it was sort of definitive for the 80s. And, you know, Judd Apatow is remarkably talented. He's a really fine director and producer and writer. And, you know, I know him a little bit, and he's been very friendly. And he's always nice about giving me credit. And I think, you know, he's invented his own sort of next step.
Yeah, I'm a big fan of Animal House. I read Maddie Simmons' book a year or so ago, Fat, Drunk, and Stupid, I think is the title of the book. But there's a remarkable story in there about, I think you and your family spent Thanksgiving during the shoot with John Belushi. Is that right?
That's correct. While we were shooting, Belushi and his wife Judy had a wonderful Thanksgiving dinner for most of the casting. It was really one of my favorites. It was a nice time to sort of stop and think about what we were doing. I think we were all very excited that we were doing something unique and special, and that was going to work, even though at that moment we were totally unknown. We were a small movie. By the way, on draft day, we had much similar feelings. There was an esprit de corps when we were making it together where everybody concerned just had this sort of feeling that somehow it was going to work, even though it was this tiny movie that that nobody really knew about. And so I've got my fingers crossed that this Friday is the beginning of a special run for us.
Question about draft day. Ivan Reitman, the director, is on the line with us. It occurs to me, Ivan, that the NFL draft is like almost the ultimate reality show. It's like The Bachelor, except in the end, instead of getting a rose, you get an NFL jersey. Would you agree?
Well, it's this life-changing moment, really, for hundreds of college players who've been sort of working day and night, all, you know, since they were little kids to this moment where they hope they're going to make it. And it's a day of good news and, unfortunately, for most people, a day of bad news. You know, there's only about, you know, 250 draftees that are selected that day, and then there's thousands of kids who don't make it. And even for people who are sort of, who get on and who are expected to go on, sometimes they drop. Sometimes they go earlier than they expect, which is great. It's just this extraordinary event where, also the NFL selects 20 people that they think are to go in the first round, and then actually invites them to New York, where they come with their families, their girlfriends, and they're actually backstage at these round tables in a green room that's literally just a curtain away from the 4,000 people that are in that theater. And, you know, they're sitting there waiting for it to happen, and they don't really know. And it's full of media. So as this happened a number of times, where particularly a quarterback just keeps dropping from an expected top five spot to second or third round, it's really rough.
Ivan, what was your favorite part about making the movie Draft Day?
I love sort of getting to know some of the professionals in the industry, particularly the behind-the-scenes people, starting with the people who are at the draft themselves, who are extraordinarily kind to us and helpful and sort of laying out all the, you know, the mechanics of what it is. Most people don't really quite understand how it happens, how they know when a trade happens and how a trade is confirmed and how, you know, where people are. It's really quite elaborate what goes on, and it's quite old school with people writing names down on a paper and holding them up in the auditorium and having it run to a team, you know, to the officials table where it gets checked out. It was all that. It was just fascinating to get to be part of this extraordinary and important event to all sports fans in America.
Director Ivan Reitman, his movie Draft Day, which came out back in April. I think it's had its run through the theaters now. And we talked to him just before the movie came out. It grossed $9.7 million on its opening weekend, fourth best that weekend. And as of a week ago, Draft Day, the movie, has grossed $28.8 million. It costs $25 million to make, so it's making money. Draft Day, the movie. I have yet to see it. Jay Harris, producer, did you get a chance to see that movie when it came out?
I did. I actually saw it on the screening they had the night
before.
That's
right. You saw it for free.
And I did.
So you did not contribute to that $28.8 million.
No.
Can you give us your Siskel and Ebert? How many thumbs up?
It was very good. I'd give it, if I can't give it two thumbs up, I'll give it one and two-thirds thumbs up, I guess.
Out of
that
how many?
Makes sense. Two thumbs up, right?
Yeah, you only have two thumbs.
Yeah.
Okay.
It was good, and it was better than I originally thought it was going to be.
Well, Ivan Reitman certainly was, he was engaging to talk to.
Yes.
I wanted to talk to him about his old stuff as opposed to Draft Day.
Wow.
That's Animal
what
House.
Sets in your mind before a movie even comes out.
Yeah.
You look back at Animal House.
Yeah. All right.
All right.
We'll take a break. All right, good. We'll take a break. We're back with more of the John Murphy Show presented by NOCO. Live tonight from One Bills Drive, this is Buffalo Bills Radio.
This is the John Murphy Show on Buffalo Bills Radio.
A couple of minutes left here on the show. Hey, earlier today on our flagship in Buffalo, WGR Sports Radio 550. On the Howard Simon Show, they had a special guest, Mark Murphy, the president of the Green Bay Packers, former Colgate safety, Clarence, New York native. He's a member of the Greater Buffalo Sports Hall of Fame. Do I got to go down the resume? Played with the Redskins, was a labor representative. He's got a law degree, athletic director at Colgate Northwestern. You know, Mark Murphy with the Green Bay Packers was a guest. And Howard Simon and the boys were asking Mark Murphy about small market teams, the Bills, the Packers, the parallels between them. Mark Murphy told the Howard Simon Show this morning, it is good, he thinks, for the NFL to be in small towns like Green Bay and Buffalo.
I actually think, now obviously I'm very biased.
Sure.
I think, a team like Green Bay is good for the league. And same with Buffalo. It's, you know, I think a diversity of different types of teams and ownerships. I think it, you know, for a team like Green Bay, you know, in the smallest market, owned by the community, to have success on the field, I think that says a lot about the structure of the league and, you know, how the league is really, you know, you look at a lot of other sports and, you know, you, I mean, it's maybe a little less so, but for many years in a lot of sports, you can really buy championships. You know, they didn't have hard salary caps. They didn't have revenue sharing. And the teams in the bigger market really had a huge advantage. In the NFL, that's really not the case. It really comes down to, you know, how do you manage football? How, you know, what kind of coaching and management do you have in place? And so it really rewards success in the areas that are important to football.
Mark Murphy, Green Bay Packers president, always interesting comments from him. That's going to wrap it up for us tonight. Tomorrow night, coverage of the NHL entry draft takes our place, and then Sal Capaccia will be here for the next couple of weeks doing the show. Make sure you tune in for him. We're back on Monday, July 14th, and the Bills go to camp later that week. Amazing. We want to thank our presenting sponsor, NOCO, family-owned and locally operated since 1933. Explore what NOCO can do for you at NOCO.com. TJ Luckman, our engineer, our producer, Jay Harris, and the Bills director of broadcasting is Jeff Matthews. It's the John Murphy Show presented by NOCO, live from One Bills Drive on Buffalo Bills Radio.